Well, the dads out there had a great Father's Day weekend. Did what you wanted to do. Had a chance to get a little R&R. And soak up some heat around here. It's still hot. And it's going to be like that for most of the summer. Again, alongside our usual crew minus one, Alberto Dueta will be back with us tomorrow at 4. However, I did see Alberto earlier today. He looked good, rested and ready for the week, along with Michael Plundo and the one and only Adrian Broaddus. Steve Kaplow, it's with you back here. And we've only got you for 90 minutes today, 90 minutes, since we will go till the start of the pregame show for the NBA Finals game number 5. As Adrian said a little while ago, it could all end tonight. It is all possible that this is going to finally end with the Celtics hoisting another title up to the rafters and, hey, putting the Dallas Mavericks out of their misery. Give the Mavs credit, give the Edmonton Oilers credit. They both extended their best of 7 series over the weekend with wins that some people didn't think would end up happening, but they did. So we will get a Game 5 for the NBA Finals tonight, which we'll have for you. We will also get a Game 5 for the Stanley Cup Finals, which we will have for you as well. Coming up today at 4:20, Luis Rodriguez, who is the president of FC Juarez. They've got a big one coming up here in less than a week now. It is the friendly with Club America coming up at the Sun Bowl. Excited about that. In fact, I'm looking forward to being out there and checking that action out next Sunday at the Sun Bowl. Should be a lot of fun. So, yes, we will get Luis on the program. Adrian, do you know that you... I was going to say, you, me, and Luis have something in common, but we don't, because I just realized you went to Franklin. So I thought for a minute you were a Coronado.
No way,
and
man.
And we'll all be T-Birds together. But no, you are a Cougar. That's right.
Yeah, how could you forget that, Steve? I'm even wearing the purple today for you.
No, I was going to say, you know how I remember more than anything else? Because of the Facebook message you gave me in high school that I never looked at until you were already interning here and you reminded me, and then I found a message that was never even seen from like 6 years or 5 years earlier. It was crazy.
Yeah, you were like, ah, this Franklin kid, forget this guy. I'm never going to give a guy like that a chance. Thank goodness you actually did, though.
Well, all I can say is thank goodness you decided to follow up with me and you didn't just say, screw that guy. If he's not responding to me, I want nothing to do with them. So I'm happy you kept, being persistent, because that was really what helped it all out. And now that you've worked with me for the last 5-6 years, you also realize what most people don't realize. And that is, for me, Facebook is simply a call screening device using Messenger. That is it. And that is also one of the reasons why I hardly see anything on Facebook.
I think I've adopted this as well, man. I've started to use Facebook less and less. I share my stories and then I message you. And that's the only two reasons why I go on Facebook on a daily basis.
Welcome to the club, man. Welcome to the club. So that's exactly right. So, yep, I understand. And all I can tell you is, and Michael, maybe you can help Alberto and Luis. They've arrived somewhere. I don't know where. Alberto says he's here at the station, and Luis is next door making his way over, which means maybe he was eating lunch or something like
that.
So that's going to be really cool. So we can get them on in. But, yes, that's the honest to God truth. But, hey, so if anybody ever tries to message me on Facebook and I don't respond, don't take it personally. It is not meant as a slight to any of you. It is simply that, other than Twitter, I mean, that's about it. I suck at Instagram. I got off of Snapchat. I've never used TikTok. I mean, you know, if you ask me, and this is the honest to God truth, if social media went away tomorrow, I would be happy. You want to know why? We would take more phone calls, because that's the way it used to be up until they invented social media. And that's just the honest to God truth. Social media comes in. Well, our phone calls are a little bit down because everybody communicates now on social. So if we had no more social media as of tomorrow, I would be thrilled, because that means that we would probably triple the normal phone call volume on this radio show that we handle right now. So that would be a nice thing. However, if you would like to turn back the clock and get into the program like we usually do, our phone number, 915-505-6009. That's 505-6009. Adrian, what a weekend it was at the U.S. Open. Man, last night, I couldn't get enough. I was watching that whole round. I kept wanting to see if Rory could win again and if Bryson DeChambeau would find a way to falter. Exactly the opposite. You tell me, as somebody who likes to pick up clubs and play from time to time, when you watched the last few holes and you saw those putts that normally 9 times out of 10 Rory sinks instead lip out or just miss completely, was it, I mean, did you feel for him? Did you say to yourself, oh no, not again? Or were you actually rooting for Bryson because suddenly he's become like the fan favorite in this situation?
Yeah, okay, let's address that part first, right? Because it was USA Chance and Rory Chance going up against each other yesterday at the U.S. Open. I thought the course beat everybody. The course won. That's the biggest winner of everybody so
That's
far.
That's true.
Because no one could figure out Pinehurst and the golf course that we saw yesterday. Number two on this whole situation right here, Rory, he makes 4 birdies in 5 holes from 9 to 13. I thought, no way, it's over. He's winning this one. He's taking this. This is just how they scripted it for him. Like,
right.
This was just like how the stars align. However, when Bryson started to be a little shaky, including that 18th shot off the tee where he goes into the rough, I thought, this is Rory. Or at least it's going to a playoff. And then Rory misses that close putt. He's waiting and watching Bryson DeChambeau finish up on 18. And then Rory immediately, like as soon as he sees that putt go in, he immediately darts for his car. And you saw the videos afterward. He sped out of there like nobody's business. He was ready to get out of there as soon as possible because of how disgusted he was with that finish. Man, as a weekend golfer, as an average golfer at best, or maybe below average at best, I would say I miss all of those close range putts. But when it's the best out there doing it and missing it, you just figure, man, is it just in their head? Is it just one of those things that lives with them rent-free, not being able to get over the hump and finally win the first major? I mean, for Rory, first major since 2014, and you blow it like that.
He's won 4 majors over during the course of his career. I think the only one he hasn't won is the green jacket, right? That's what he's missing,
exactly.
Is the Masters.
Yes, that's
so
right.
He's won at the U.S. Open before, but it has been a while. It really has. And Bryson's won before, too, at the U.S. Open. So for him, it was a chance to go back-to-back. But you're right. But you know what the thing was this, okay? Every time Rory was in position, he missed his putts down the stretch. And when Bryson teed off on 18, and let's be honest, hooked that ball so badly that he was in an awful spot. And then his second shot goes into a bunker. Like, he gets out of that terrible shot, but then he goes right into a bunker. And you're thinking, well, it's a tough shot for the third shot. And he hits the most perfect shot out of a bunker that you could ever imagine, setting up the game winner. I mean, look, hey, he earned it. He actually played himself out of trouble and put himself in that position to win, whereas Rory had played better golf, had great opportunities, but just kept missing every putt. So really, I don't know, you feel bad for Rory McIlroy? I guess if you like Rory, you feel bad for him. He's been going through all that stuff with his wife during the course of the last few weeks and obviously all that off the course stuff. But Bryson, you know, hey, he earned it. When he needed to come up big, he did, which Rory couldn't do.
You know, one of the other parts about this all, too, or here's my question to you, Steve. As a casual golf fan, were you rooting for Bryson? Were you, at the last final stretch, were you kind of going for him?
I don't know. Like, you know what was weird? When I was watching these two, all I kept thinking about is nobody wants to win this tournament.
Yeah.
That was all I was saying, is it's going to go to a playoff because every time you think these two guys have a chance, they just find ways to blow it. So all I kept thinking was, I didn't really have a rooting interest. I just kept thinking, will somebody win this tournament? Because it seemed like every time it was there for the taking, both players would come up short until the 18th hole for Bryson.
I think that's how a lot of people took it into. They weren't really ready to go all in on Bryson or all in on Rory on either side. I think the golf enthusiasts or the fans who love the sport, they probably were rooting a little bit more for Rory, just knowing that the drought was there. But at the same time, for me, I watch weekly, and I was also there at the end happy for Bryson. Like, you know, I was somebody who probably rooted against Bryson from 2019 to probably 2022, all the way up until really this year. And the fact that he had the success and he won it, I was impressed. I was happy for him.
He's more likable now than he's been in years past. That's just the truth, too, is that it seemed like all of a sudden, all that live stuff, put that behind, people are looking at him going, okay, you know what? They were behind him. They've seen him. His personality was more endearing to the fans. And I think that was part of it as well, is that, you know what? For an afternoon, people weren't worrying about what tour he's on. They were just looking at him as the golfer itself and realizing that he still hits shots that nobody else on tour is going to be able to hit.
You know, it's just one of those things where you think about, man, Rory is such a polarizing figure. You either love him or you hate him. Bryson, same way. Love him or absolutely hate him. But I think now there are more people who are willing to jump on the Bryson bandwagon than those are out there who are excited about Rory. I think Bryson's likability has really come up, and then Rory has kind of been just whatever at this point.
I'm with you. All right, we'll talk more about the U.S. Open here in a little bit. Luis Rodriguez is here with us from FC Juarez. We'll get a chance to reconnect with him. They've got a very big exhibition match coming up here at the Sun Bowl we're going to talk about today, and a whole lot more of FC Juarez discussion. We're excited about having Luis with us here at the radio station. We've been working on this for months, and now we'll get a chance to have the former Coronado alum with us to talk a little FC Juarez as we continue. Quarter pass. Let's go to Charlie for traffic. Then we're back right here, 600 ESPN El Paso. Past the hour. Well, Adrian, what a treat we have here as we continue on the program, because joining us right now is a man who grew up in El Paso. Then he left, made a name for himself in the soccer world or the football world, and now is back. And he's running the show out at FC Juarez, and excited about having Luis Rodriguez with us here for the first time. I was at your introductory press conference, enjoyed getting a chance to meet you then, and I know it's taken a little while, but hey, I appreciate you giving us a little time and coming on the show today.
Steve, pleasure to be here. This is a dream for me since I was a kid. I used to listen to your show, so thank you. It has taken a while. I was telling you earlier, when I drive back from Juarez every day, I listen to the show, right? And I can't believe 10 months have gone by, right? So I'm glad we're here. I'm glad we're doing this, and we should do this much more.
We should. In fact, 10 months ago, that means, because I remember your press conference was during a day baseball game, a home game with the Chihuahuas that we had. And that's right, because Chihuahuas baseball season goes all the way through September, and didn't realize that we were talking, what was that, about last August when you were introduced?
Last September, first week of September, yeah.
Oh, my God. All right. Has it flown by for you since you've been here?
It has flown by. Sometimes I'm driving on I-10 or, I got to pinch myself because it's so familiar, but I haven't been back in 22, 23 years, living for a long extended period of time. So it's been very good. The only thing I've struggled with really has been the weather. Mm-hmm. Not the heat, more the wind and what was the spring. The springs here, I forget how brutal they are.
Oh, yeah.
But no, on the team side, see, listen, we've wanted better results on the field. Things haven't gone our way. Our women's team, FC Juarez Femenil, who were on your show a few weeks ago, have done very, very well. Right, but we're starting to turn the boat in the right direction. So we've got a lot of cool stuff coming up with the team here in the summer towards next season. So, yeah, excited for what's to come.
When you came back and started, your position in the front office with FC Juarez, was one of your first responsibilities, besides team-to-team operations, trying to figure out how to take this club and make them more familiar for just El Pasoans so that even if they're not going to the matches at Benito Juarez Stadium, they can still keep up, still feel like they're very much a part of this club, even though we've got El Paso Locomotive FC?
Yeah, so, when we sit, we have great owners, by the way. So Paul Foster, Alejandro La Vega Foster, Woody Hunt, Josh Hunt. My direct boss, Alan Ledford, president of Mountain Star. By the way, he says hello. I was speaking to him earlier.
Awesome.
They're very bullish on what FC Juarez can be. Mountain Star sports in general. And so when you take a step back, one of our strategic pillars is, one, how can we be number one in El Paso? right? And then going to the Southwest, and I'll get into that in a bit. But when you think about it, we are the only major league team of any sport within a 300-mile radius, right? So to the east, you've got Austin or Dallas, whichever one you prefer. Mm-hmm. To the north, you've got Denver. To the west, you've got Phoenix. To the south, you have Torreon, where Santos plays in Liga MX. Liga MX is the most watched soccer league in the United States.
Yeah.
Bigger than the Premier League, bigger than MLS, right? More viewers in the Euro or Copa America this summer, right? And, you know, the Borderland has a team that plays in Liga MX. So we are trying to communicate that more. We're trying to be number one in El Paso. We're trying to connect fans and say, hey, there is premium soccer on the border, right? And then also, too, you know, so people can understand that we're owned by the same company, right? So we're the only team in Liga MX or MLS that owns a USL team. And by the way, they play 2 miles away from our stadium. Yes, in another country, in another city, but it's still part of the same family.
Not to mention the relationship, working relationship with the two of you have allowed for you to have players on loan with El Paso Locomotive FC. And we've seen those results over the last, you know, 5-6 years. El Paso has reaped the benefits of having sometimes players that maybe will get an opportunity to develop themselves more here than they would across the border with FC Juarez.
Yeah, 100%. So it's gone both ways. So, for example, we have Benny Diaz. He's our number two goalie now at FC Juarez. He's a starter for Locomotive last season. Played a pivotal role when our goalkeeper Sebastian Jurado got hurt back in March. Started 4 games. You know, did very, very well. Actually started the local derby when we played against Locomotive back in March. So, you know, and then now we have 3 players on loan, Javier Nevarez, Ramon Pasquel, Gonzalo Pelua. So we're starting to see those synergies happen more and more. And that you will see that over the coming years with youth players, players on loan, players, you know, we technically purchase, but there's no cost because they come from the same family. So, you know, a lot of good things in the works.
As popular as Liga MX is around the country, like you talked about, they have great television agreements right now and relationships in both English and Spanish, which really help. Why do you think, I don't want to say, there's not necessarily a disconnect with El Paso Sports and FC Juarez, but why do you feel like right now maybe we haven't been able to brand the club with the local community like, let's say, we could and maybe still will here in the weeks and months to come as you continue to settle in and try to make these two communities one when it comes to this club?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've got to own it. I don't think we put the work in, my predecessors, and not that, you know, we're putting the shining light on the administration that I manage now. But, you know, I think there just hasn't been enough effort put into, you know, how do we message what we have here in the Borderplex? This is a soccer hotbed. You know, we've got players who play on the national team. So Ricardo Pepi playing Copa America, he's from Juarez in El Paso. Alejandro Sendejas, who's coming this weekend, he plays on the U.S. national team in the mix. So I think we've never been able to connect the two cities when realizing that both cities have always been connected.
Yeah.
Right? The amount of people who either work in El Paso and live in Juarez, work in Juarez, live in El Paso, like myself, right? So it's really one integrated community. It's not two cities.
It is. That's right. Which, again, gives you the opportunity, like you have on Sunday, playing a huge exhibition match at the Sun Bowl. Hey, that's the kind of thing that really could help open up the doors and get more and more people in this community on board with Los Bravos.
Yeah. So we've got a great venue, the Sun Bowl. Probably closest stadium. Well, now there's a ballpark, Southwest University ballpark. But probably closest college venue next to the U.S.-Mexico border. Very iconic. Home to the Sun Bowl game every December. Right. We've got Club America, which is arguably the most followed team in Mexico and in North America. Right. Back-to-back Liga MX champs. Right. A player from El Paso, as mentioned earlier, Alejandro Sendejas. Other national team players. And who are they playing? They're playing the Borderlands Major League team. Playing FC Juarez, Los Bravos. First time it's ever happened before, so we want to use his experience once a year. We play the Derby in March. Once a year, do a big event at the Sun Bowl, right? And make it a tradition, right? If we bring Club America this year, maybe next year we bring a European team from Spain or from the UK. We're doing that in July. We're bringing Eintracht Frankfurt, a team that's playing Champions League, plays in the Bundesliga. We're taking them to Juarez. So we're about, you know, bringing soccer experiences to the borderland.
I'm happy you mentioned that, Luis, and it's important because we were wondering just last week when we were talking about the Sun Bowl uplift and what they're trying to do with that facility. I mean, when you talk about the turf and what the current playing turf is for the Sun Bowl, does that impact potentially more matches coming to El Paso because it's not natural grass and instead we're playing with the field turf? Or is that a hurdle that you're able to overcome like you will this Sunday?
We're able to overcome it. I give kudos to the team at UTEP, and they've been great partners in this match. UTEP has replaced their field turf with a state-of-the-art field turf, right? That is actually FIFA Pro quality. So because it is FIFA Pro quality, we're able to bring first, you know, big-time soccer events, first division teams over. Doesn't mean every time we play at the Sun Bowl, it will be on the field turf. Maybe we have to bring in a grass field, right? But it gives us the opportunity to have that conversation. And
I didn't realize that the new turf they have now is FIFA approved. That's a big deal when you're talking about really these kind of matches versus the predecessor, which didn't have that ability.
Correct. FIFA Pro quality, which is something that we, you know, when we were doing the whole thing for the match and we were going through, you know, the bells and whistles, we figured this out. We had a great conversation with Club America, right? They're partners as well in the match, and they were very much in favor of doing it. They had played 2 months earlier at Gillette Stadium against New England Revolution and also FIFA Pro quality turf, so they were all game. But again, opens up the conversation for us to bring more teams, not just in the summer, but maybe in the fall as well.
Are there any stadiums in Liga MX that have field turf, or are they all natural grass when you look at every stadium there is?
There is one. It is Tijuana Los Cholos. They have their turf. I have not, you know, ever stepped on it. From what I understand, the players do not like it. However, they are also changing their turf this summer to also a FIFA Pro quality turf. So everyone, you know, and the other thing too with Leagues Cup, the annual competition we play against MLS teams. Mm-hmm. You've got five or six clubs in MLS that play on field turf, right? So I think that taboo of not playing on field turf, it's going away because we're doing it every summer.
Not to mention, there are some venues that are also NFL venues. So if you play in, let's say, a college, an NCAA venue, or in an NFL venue, you mentioned Gillette Stadium, for example. Yeah, some of those are going to be those same surfaces that you can use for different sports, not just football. Maybe it also has the type of turf that you could play multiple sports on.
Yeah, these multi-purpose venues are great for that. Also, too, when the sports fan thinks about it, you know, there's also a maintenance issue. We have a very difficult time keeping our training fields top quality, right? The weather in El Paso, as I mentioned earlier, it's brutal, right? So you've got very extreme winters, very hot summers, you've got wind, right? So even maintaining really high quality grass fields is tough in this area.
More with Luis Rodriguez as we continue here on Sports Talk. 505-6009. We are at the bottom of the hour. Let's head over to Michael Plundo, standing by with this Sports Center update. All right, Michael, thank you very much. As we continue here on Sports Talk, Luis Rodriguez is with us as we continue. President of FC Juarez and someone who grew up in El Paso. In fact, for people that don't know your story, because it's a great story, tell everybody about just what, you know, your life was like growing up here in the Sun City, and when you had the opportunity when you left to really make your name in the soccer world.
Yeah, so I grew up here in El Paso. I grew up on the west side of town. I grew up playing all sports. Really took a liking to soccer and really started focusing on that when I was 12, 13 years old. Really, my best friends from home come from playing soccer. Fortunate enough to play with them at Coronado High School. So I graduated in 2001. And I have great memories and always really liked, you know, loved being from here. Really, if UTEP had a Division I program, I would have never left, to be quite honest. Didn't want to leave. Would go to Juarez a ton. I have a lot of family in Juarez. Used to go to soccer games there. And so really was able to experience the bicultural nature of the borderplex. I went to UTEP for 1 year. In 2001, and then in 2002, I moved to New York. I went to St. John's University, where I was a member of the men's soccer team there. And then after that, I graduated with a sports management degree, not ever thinking I was going to work in sports. Actually, that was the fastest thing to graduate. I actually wanted to move back to El Paso. And, you know, fortune had it, I had an internship at Major League Soccer at the league office, and they offered me a full-time position in 2006, and I worked there through 2014 in various different roles. Ended up loving living in New York, lived it through my entire 20s, met my wife, we got married, and then ended up moving to Switzerland and working for the commercial agency that does the UEFA Champions League and UEFA Europa League, worked on that for 3 years. My wife's from Colombia, so we always had this third continent issue. She's from South America, I'm technically from North America, we were living in Europe, so we kind of decided Miami was a great point between both. And then got an opportunity to go work for IMG, the big, renowned global sports agency, moved to Miami, worked on a huge project in South America with Copa Libertadores, restructuring all those commercial rights, which now have had tremendous success. And then 2.5 years ago, got the opportunity of a lifetime was able to work for FIFA, you know, the global government body of football. And so I ran their global sponsorship sales team, managing a high-performance team, which was a dream of mine. Worked the FIFA World Cup in Qatar, worked the Women's World Cup in Australia and New Zealand, and really was really comfortable and was really happy. I was loving Miami, had, you know, my two kids were very happy there. And you know, there was always part of me that wanted to work in club football. That was kind of the next step. Wasn't really looking for anything, and I always knew the ownership group here at Mountain Star. And ironically, there's a funny story, and I'll tell it on air. First time I've told it, I was in New York City. I was sitting with Court Jeske, who's the chief commercial officer of United Soccer Leagues, good friend of mine. And the phone rings, and it's Alan Ledford, right? And I'm in a taxi on the way to LaGuardia, and he's asking me a separate question about, some stuff that, you know, if I could give him some advice on another issue. And I go, hey, I'm with Court Jeske. He says hello. And we were joking around that, you know, maybe one day, I should go work for FC Juarez. And he goes, listen, kidding aside, if that was on the table, you know, we'd love to have you. And so it kind of opened up my mind to say, hey, it's a possibility. And so went through the motions, spoke to my wife, spoke to the family. They were incredibly supportive, and I'll always be thankful for that. And, you know, it's important because a lot of the times, you know, your family is sacrificing their happiness sometimes, or immediate happiness, to follow your dreams. So I'm already thankful for my family for helping me follow mine. And so, yeah, over the summer, I worked the Women's World Cup, and things came to fruition, and we moved here. My family moved before I did in August, and I moved here at the end of August. So here we are. And so it's a dream come true, working with FC Juarez and helping out with El Paso Locomotive, helping Andrew as well on the commercial side. So, yeah, couldn't be happier.
That's an amazing story, Luis, because essentially for you, you just brought it up as, I don't want to say in jest, but you just threw it out there, and it's led an opportunity for you to eventually come back. Who knows? If you never mention it, you know, Alan might never think that was even in the realm of possibility, and this situation never happens.
100%. 100%. And it was something, by the way, something completely unplanned, completely off the cuff. And, you know, it's funny things in life like this, you know, it makes you start to think what's possible, right? And so now 11 months forward, here we are. And I think we really have an awesome opportunity to change things. And so, you know, how can we help build a legacy? And ultimately, the difference between 22 years ago and now, and Steve, you probably see it, soccer now has grown here. And soccer was always big, but, you know, it's different now. It's very different now. And I see that. And so, how can we make an impact on those 10, 11, 12-year-olds so now when they're 30 or 40, you know, we really become a bigger soccer town?
Yeah, you almost want it to be like, and I'll equate this to UTEP, okay? Growing up here in the 80s, watching UTEP, hanging banners in basketball, going to the NCAA tournament. Some of us have been watching UTEP for 40, 50, 60-plus years, and it's ingrained in us because that's what we've seen since we were young. If you could have that same kind of impact now with the younger generation where they're familiar with FC Juarez and El Paso Locomotive FC, but they go to matches, they know the players, they follow the leagues, and as they get older, it's second nature to them, that would be that'd be the ultimate, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so, you know, part of my dream is, you know, walking in an airport and you see an FC Juarez jersey or an El Paso Locomotive jersey, and it's people who, you know, have taken a liking to the team because of the culture we've created. And so part of what we want to do, you know, with FC Juarez is we want to in the future be the Mexican-American team for those Mexican-Americans out in the U.S. or the diaspora or all over the world. And what I mean by that is, you know, a lot of clubs, you know, hedge their fandom on, hey, you know, your father likes Club America or your mother likes Chivas, right? So that's what you should be. But the reality is MLS has grown so much in the last 25 years that you go to kids and say, what's your favorite football team? It's LAFC, right? So what we want to do in the future is say, hey, my favorite football team is LAFC, but I kind of, you know, I really like FC Juarez from Liga MX because they represent my identity, right? And by the way, you don't have to be Mexican American. Just how can we help you fit into the identity?
For you, do you see this as a project that, you know, it's going to take time. This is not a quick fix. It's not an overnight thing. Winning obviously helps because everybody gets excited about a winner. But branding a club in an area that really, you know, has so much potential, it is something that that will take time, right?
It will take time. All good things take a ton of time, and I hope to see it through. In terms of it could take a decade, mm-hmm. right? So we've got a global brand. Juarez is a global brand. Perhaps at the moment for the wrong reasons, right? Or in the past for the wrong reasons, but we can be a part and changing that. By the way, Las Bravas, FC Juarez Femenil, does a great job with that, right? So we are the only club in Liga MX represented on the board of owners by a woman, Alejandra La Vega Foster. So we're proud of that, right? And so we want to showcase that. So this will take time, and we want to be recognized, you know, on the field helps, right? And that's part of our product, right? But our brand and our messaging and our identity is much more important.
Our phone number is 505-6009. That's 505-6009. We'll come back, wrap up the hour with Luis. If you've got questions or comments, now's the time to get them in as Sports Talk continues. 600 ESPN El Paso.
In El Paso Metroplex, some new rough edges that I want to add here. First of all, in Northeast, Dyer and Saluki, we have a crash. But with injury here, Dyer and Saluki, PD going out there, fire department going out there. They're not there yet. Also, we have a crash at Border Highway East and Rio Grande on that accident. And PD, fire department going to that one at Rio Grande East and also at Rio Grande. So caution in that area. That's a downtown area. By Sano and Shelter, we have a wreck. Working that wreck. Then we have some closures going on. I-10 East and Los Mochis left lane taken away. The old restaurant, 3520 Rimcon, approaching 78 years in business. Thank you. Original family since 1946. We have the famous tortilla soup. Family owned and operated. The old restaurant, 7520 Rimcon, Charlie 1600. ESPN El Paso.
Ticketmaster. Encourage the fans to go buy them. This game is selling well. We're expecting anywhere between 30,000-35,000 people.
Excellent. And this is a Mountain Star Sports production, correct? Or is this a UTEP production?
This is we're partnering with UTEP as well. They've been great partners, but it's really Mountain Star Sports Group. And what I mean by that is we've taken, similar to what we did with the Derby back in March, we've got staff from FC Juarez, staff from El Paso Locomotive, and actually some Chihuahua staff as well. Chihuahuas play on Sunday, but some of their staff's going to work for us on Sunday.
So you got all hands on deck for this one.
Yeah, yeah. And then, by the way, that's what we strive to. So how can we all, you know, take the best of everything and put it together?
And the goal would be to do this annually and have like a big match once a year that fans could look forward to.
We'd love to have one once a year in the summer, in June, on the weekend. Beautiful sun at night under the lights. Yeah, every year we want to do it.
Could you see the Sun Bowl starting to host some of the bigger scaled matches as well? Possibly a U.S. Mexico friendly, maybe an under 20 or some of the national games.
100% they can. A friendly is no problem. It's just a matter of aligning the dates. And ultimately, what these friendlies look for is there demand in these cities for soccer? And are people hungry enough to come and watch it? So I think, yeah, there definitely will be.
Can you imagine U.S., Mexico, and El Paso, how great that would be?
It'll be wild. Yeah. It'll be wild. I mean, who would go? These games are funny because the people who you think would root for the U.S. root for Mexico.
They do.
Right? And vice versa.
We have calls all the time about people that have lived here their whole lives and they're pro-Mexico, not pro-US. When it comes to the national games, they're like, you know what? We'll never change our allegiance. My father rooted for Mexico. My grandfather, that's how they grew up.
Yeah, what's interesting, too, is you speak to a lot of the people here who they've grown up here, but they root for Mexico. Then when they're with their family in Mexico, they're considered American, right? So then they go for the U.S., mm-hmm. right? So it's just really a unique niche in culture.
All right, let's go take some phone calls right now. 11 in front of 5. Sports Talk continues. We've got Alex who is on the lines. Alex, welcome. You are on with Luis Rodriguez from FC Juarez.
Hey, guys. Another Coronado alum here joining the conversation. I just have a few questions. Really, my first one is, you know, you gained some heat there at the end of last season. You win, I believe, it's 4 out of your last 6 to pick up, you know, as many points as you can. But I'll just be honest, you have 7 exits since the season ended, and you've signed no one. And your key offensive piece is 30 years old. I guess the only question is this the squad we're rolling with for the next season? And then my other question, and I'll get off, is there's been a lot of talk connecting FC Juarez and the owners to buying a club in Spain. Is there any advancements on that? And I'll let us go. Thank you, guys.
Oh, good. It's only taken us 30 minutes, but we finally have some juicy questions for you, Luis. That's good. Softballs are gone. Now they're throwing fastballs at you. Let's start first with that second part about the ownership group in Spain.
Yeah. Alex, thanks for the call. Once a T-Bird, always a T-Bird. So thanks for the call. So I think, I mean, if you look in the press, I think the ownership's never been shy in terms of wanting a club abroad. Right, specifically Spain. Spain is an interesting market because of the language, right? So it actually, one of the reasons for this, it provides a pathway for players to one, they can start in El Paso, then they go to Juarez, and then every major big time player wants to play in Europe, mm-hmm. right? One of the top 5 leagues, right? So this provides a pathway there, and so you know, there's also it's hard to bring players to the borderland. Borderland, it's a tough place to play, right? So this provides an opportunity for players to really consider Mountain Star Sports Group, right? Or whether it's one of the owners owning a team, right, out in Europe. So if it's apart from Mountain Star Sports Group. So, yeah, I think there's always an intention to do something in Europe, and time will tell.
Awesome. Now, back to the question at hand about the club, talking about some of the players leaving and the roster as it stands right now. I'm always assuming that most GMs will say, no roster is ever set. You're always thinking if you can approve a team at any point in time, you will. That being said, are there moves still to be made, or do you feel like the roster you have at this point is the one you want to roll with?
No, the moves will be made. And so Alex makes a good point. We've had 7, you know, 7 players who will likely be moving on or are moving on. One of the unique things about Mexican soccer, specifically in this Apertura time of the year, which is, you know, July to December, is, you know, the player transfer window starts July 1st, right? Our season starts July 5th, right? But it ends, you know, the player transfer window ends at the end of August, right? So yeah, there are sometimes our team could look a little bit different by the time we get to week 10, right? And those are risks we take, right? Sometimes they go very well, sometimes they backfire. Last year we started amazing, we made some trades, and we didn't end the season so well. So I think part of it, too, is, you know, how do we find the right pieces of the puzzle to get in the mix, right? So these changes will start to happen in July.
Is this the part of the job that, you know, you've enjoyed a lot because, you know, you haven't really had that the day-to-day when it comes to player operations like you're certainly dealing with now? Or for you, is it more of the sponsorship side, the sales side, or when it comes to player acquisitions, is that something you're very much involved in?
I manage the business day-to-day. The player side is an integral part to it, but I'm not involved in the X's and O's. We've got a great team, included by my counterpart, Andres Fassi. Right? He's the president of sports for Mountain Star Sports Group. Right? He's very much involved day-to-day. Humberto Valdez, Beto, who you've met, he's very much in the trenches on this. And so they eat, drink, and sleep what it is, player acquisitions and transfers. So that's the one thing they're focused on, and also getting the team prepared for the season.
Excellent. As far as business goes, have you seen a lot of good responses to businesses you've approached in both markets, El Paso and Juarez, as you've talked about maybe expanding potential partnerships, relationships with sponsors and other businesses that are interested in wanting to get involved with Los Bravos?
Yeah, I think part of it too is, especially on the El Paso side, people just becoming familiar with, you know, who we are and what we do. A lot of people, when we talk about this whole, you know, the only major league team within 300 miles, you know, kind of light, you know, a light bulb goes off in their head. And bringing big events. So I think it's no surprise to everyone. You know, we have a presenting sponsor for the match on Sunday, you know, Casa Auto Group, right? And so they're part of the Locomotive family also. But I think the idea of extending their relationship into, you know, first division soccer, you know, the most watched league in the U.S., being a part of that, I think is interesting.
In terms of the future, where do you see this going here in the next couple of years? Give me the blueprint. Let's say your blueprint for growing the club comes to fruition. Where could you see this here, maybe the next time we get a chance to talk to you here down the road?
So, you know, we need to improve on the field. I think there's no doubt about that. I think ownership also agrees, and our counterparts on the sports side, right? But at the same time, in parallel, how are we building a brand? How are we building an experience for fans? So we're talking during the break about bringing, you know, Steve and team coming to Juarez for a game, right? Ultimately, you remember the experience if you're a consumer and you're a fan, right? And so we want the experience for the consumer to be unforgettable, so you keep coming back. And a good pilot I've done with this is I've taken my son's friends from school to matches, right? And they always want to come back, right? And I think as a fan, if you want to come back, you know, as a rights holder, you've done a good job.
How old are your sons?
10 and 6.
Oh, so it's the perfect age. Like, I mean, you get them indoctrinated now, and they're like we talked about, they're going to grow up being fans and hooked on it and wanting to go to every match and realizing that that's a big part of their childhood.
Yeah, you know, one of the cool things about soccer, all sports to be fair, is when you speak to people when they're older, right? And, you know, when a team is lost or they're in the emotion, right? And whether it's good or bad, you know, they always say, oh, thanks to my father, I became a Bravos fan, right? And so, you know, when I'm long and gone, you know, I want my kids to tell my grandkids to say, I became a Bravos fan because of my father. So I hope that will happen. They know much more about the team than I do. Sometimes they ask me about transfers I haven't even heard of because they've seen them on social media or on the internet. So it's amazing what kids know.
Last question. Merchandising is huge. It's a big part of the sports experience. Where in El Paso can fans find a complete line of FC Juarez merch?
Well, you can go online and find it at fcjuarez.com. Right? You can go to the Mountain Star Sports Store as of next week. Right? We will have gear. We'll have gear on Sunday. We've got 3 stores in Juarez. Right? Our idea is to have much more merchandise here in El Paso. We had a huge Cobras launch. The Juarez team from the 90s back in March did really, really well. So, yeah, you'll see a lot more of our gear, the margarita green jerseys. You'll see them out and about. But
good.
It's been fun.
All right. Come back and see us again, Luis. Great to have you here, and especially now that we know you spend your time away from work in El Paso where you live. No excuse for you not to drop by and check in from time to time with us.
Thanks, Steve. It's been awesome.
You got it. He's Luis Rodriguez, folks, and joins us from FC Juarez. 1 hour down, 30 to go. We'll get you ready for the NBA Finals. It's game number 5, and it's coming up here in half an hour on 600 ESPN El Paso.
Adrian brought us.
All right, so we have 25 minutes left here on the program, and then we'll get you ready to go for NBA Finals Game 5 action. The Celtics with a chance to win it all tonight. Dallas hoping to send it back to Big D for Game 6. I'll tell you what, if Dallas wins tonight, that would make things very, very interesting. I don't think it's going to happen. I'm not a betting man, but if I was a betting man, I would put my money on the Celtics today and see what ends up happening. But once again, that's coming up here at the bottom of the hour. Excited about that as we continue with Michael Plundo, Adrian Broaddus, Steve Kaplowitz. Chihuahua's back home tomorrow night against Sugarland. The Skeeters, excited about that as well. Excited about the possibility, Adrian, of broadcasting the show, as Luis said, from Benito Juarez Olympic Stadium. We've never done that before. You know, you want to talk about sports bucket list items. I have never broadcasted sports talk in almost 30 years, 27 plus years, from Juarez. This would be a first. And if we can make that happen, be very excited about the potential there.
Yeah, we got to make it happen. That'd be great. I got my passport. I'm ready to go, Steve. I would love to do it. We've got an aficionado part of a sports talk as well, because we've got Alberto Retta. Yep. He's not here in the building, but he would definitely be probably with us if we forced him to. So, yeah, maybe he could be our tour guide.
Do you have one of those little passport cards? It's like a credit card that you can get with your passport?
No.
So you don't have to take the whole passport with you and go back and forth?
No.
Okay, I have one of those. So I'm excited. And a passport. So, yeah, we're both ready to roll. We can make this happen.
Yeah, I'm excited about this, man. I love Juarez.
Okay, good. When was the last time you've been to Benito Juarez Stadium?
Never.
Me neither. This could be cool.
Yeah, I think this would be awesome, man.
Just have to go test the equipment in advance, and then we'll be ready to rock.
That's no problem at all. Let's make it happen. I think we should do it, man.
I do, too. I'm excited. This is going to be next month. So thank you, Luis, for putting that in motion and give us a chance to cross that one off the bucket list. How about that? Be first international broadcast in sports talk history.
Man, that would be a great bucket list item like you were mentioning, Steve. I'll also mention this. I have not been to Juarez recently, so I'd love to go back. I'm jealous of my mom. I feel like my mom goes out to Juarez, you know, not a lot, but she goes and has some fun over there. So, yeah, I want to get out there for sure.
Do you know that the team at Mount Star has been talking about this for us? They've invited me in the past. I just never been able to make it out there. And this would be the perfect time to do it before the friendly against Frankfurt. What a great chance that would be.
So, yeah, that'd be great. I would love it.
Yeah, me too. So that is something that, could very well become a reality for us, and looking forward to that. All right, 505-6009, our telephone number as we continue here on Sports Talk, 505-6009. Gets you right on in and through to the show as we have the abbreviated 90-minute edition today and then 6:30 tomorrow and the rest of the week with the Chihuahuas in Sugarland. I was hoping we would get you, Darvish, here Wednesday on an injury rehab start, but Adrian, he's going to Fort Wayne, and here's why. The Padres are on the East Coast. If they were in San Diego this week, we probably would get you, Darvish, here Wednesday. But Fort Wayne is a much easier trip to get back and rejoin the team. So he'll be going to High A and making the rehab start on Wednesday.
Do you think we'll ever get a chance to see you, Darvish? It's hard to say, right? I mean, we could easily just say, hey, you know, any other rehab stint. But practically, I don't know, like the practicality reasons, you just listed it right there. It might make more sense for Fort Myers than it would, you know, here at El Paso.
Well, let's put it this way. Again, Fort Wayne's Indiana. They're in Philly tonight, starting a series with the Phils. And then looking at the schedule, let's say like Darvish needs to make a couple of starts, right? They go, and it's a tough trip for them because they go from Philly and then they're home Thursday through next Wednesday. They've got Milwaukee and Washington. So let's say Darvish makes a rehab start Wednesday and then needs another start. Then maybe next, because next Tuesday they'll already be on the road. So it would have to be Sunday, and he's not going to start on 3 days rest or 4 days rest. So unfortunately, no, I don't necessarily think it's going to be in the cards.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense this summer. And you don't want him to get back on the injury rehab list. So, this is just hopefully for the Padres' sake, a one-time kind of deal.
Yeah, that's true. That is really true. But anyway, you never know. There was rumors going that we possibly could get a rehab assignment this week for Kyle Tucker. So Kyle Tucker is one of the best outfielders in baseball as he's trying to make his way back from the Astros. If he needs some minor league rehab, since Sugar Land's here through Sunday, maybe we luck out and get Kyle Tucker coming here later in the week.
Maybe if I text Tim or something a photo of Kyle Tucker when he joined us on the field for the AAA All-Star game back in 2019, maybe he'll be willing to do a spot with us or something, Steve.
Could you imagine how cool that would be?
A little full circle moment for Kyle, yeah, not for us.
That would be awesome. Hey, this happened earlier today at El Paso High School, and it's very cool because it kind of flew under the radar a little bit. Micah Parsons was in town for a football camp today, and this is something that I thought was really cool. Getting the opportunity to be part of this, you think about it, Adrian, man. I mean, he mentioned when he was here at the Jones Brothers game that he wanted to come back, and he was going to come back. Well, Micah Parsons having a youth football camp in June in El Paso is probably one of the coolest things that could happen to all these kids that are big big football fans.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, look, think about this week in particular, Steve. Micah Parsons holding the camp today out at El Paso High. I believe it's Friday. If it's not Friday, it's Saturday that Will Hernandez will be hosting his first camp here in El Paso for the youth. That one will be free with Will Hernandez. The one that was was held earlier today, you know, with Micah Parsons was paid. Let me give you the full rundown. This is thanks to our pal from Football Friday Night, Angel Torres, who said, listen to this, okay? 1 p.m. start, that was the time for registration. The line to register kids went outside the main football exit at El Paso High and went way down the street all the way to Cliff. Once they were registered, the kids were onto the field and were lined up by age group. Micah Parsons showed up around 2 o'clock today. Those who paid extra were taken to an end zone spot where there was a backdrop and personal pictures.
Ah.
And so there was a DJ, and that, and the DJ announced that every kid who registered with an email will receive group pictures that were taken, you know, with Micah Parsons. He jumped from group to group taking pictures, very enthusiastic. You know, Angel Torres also said that Micah Parsons could not have been more accommodating, said he was engaged with every single kid who is out there. The expensive package, Steve, get this, $600.
Oh, my God.
Okay, but for all the other campers, they paid $150 to go there. And then there was another upgrade that he couldn't figure out what it was for $200 more. So you could get something for like $350 with Micah Parsons at this camp. So he stayed past the deadline, which was right here at 5 o'clock, and he's still throwing passes to kids. He's having a great time. He's in sweatpants and t-shirts. So there you go.
Wow, that's very cool. Very cool.
Thank you, Angel Torres, for the full camp rundown.
You know what? I'm impressed. And let me say this. I am impressed. And more than anything, thank you, Angel. I'll say this too, which is also very cool. You know, look, was it cheap? No, it wasn't. But props to Micah Parsons for coming to El Paso when it's 100 degrees outside and for 3 or 4 hours putting a football camp together in the prime hottest part of the day. That's a big deal.
Yeah, Angel was texting me that he was so impressed that Micah would go into these group like sessions to take photos and then immediately pop out to help with like drills. So he never had a break, Steve. He was like constantly being pulled left and right to take photos and then go to the drill spot, take photos and then go over here to help out some campers. So he was very, very engaged throughout the camp.
Wow. All right. Well, let me say this. I'm impressed. You knew it would do well just because it's like the biggest name. It's like, just imagine if it was 40 years ago and Emmitt Smith was hosting a camp during those days. Or let's go more recent, Dez Bryant. Or, you know, you could look at anybody, really. Anybody on the Cowboys who's a major name. Micah Parsons is the best defensive player on the team. You could argue he is the best player on the team. And when you've got the best player on Dallas putting a football camp together, even if it's a paid camp, do we know how much the regular cost of the camp
$150
was? All right. For the afternoon? I mean, most parents would say, yep, we'll do that in a heartbeat. For our kid to have a chance to be on the football field being tutored by Micah, that's great. What it also goes to show you is now you also know why the Jones Brothers football camp, which is free through the A&A All the Way Foundation, sells out in a matter of minutes when those spots go on sale.
Yeah, that's a good point, right? And I feel like this town is starving for more stuff like this, camps. You know, I had our very own Cade McConnell reach out to me saying, how cool would it be if I held a camp, you know, in El Paso, seeing all these kids going out to Micah Parsons' camp. I was like, you know what? Gavin Hardison did it last year. The year before that, it was Deion Hankins. So it's not like you'd be the first player to do that from UTEP side of things. But on the flip side, it's great that these NFL players come to El Paso and show off their skills and just kind of show off who they are to these kids. This could be life-changing for the people out there today. And he is the best player on the Cowboys. I agree with you completely there, Steve. He's probably the most likable and maybe the face of the Cowboys too when you think about it from top to bottom. I think Dak held that crown up until just recently, and Micah Parsons has stolen that crown.
They have a huge crowd today too. I was looking at that group. There's a lot of kids that were there for that. A lot.
I would say over 100, right?
I would too.
And he's like, Micah Parsons is there at the 50-yard line being mauled by these little kids, and then he's throwing a pass 50 yards to the end zone for kids to catch touchdown passes.
Michael, you tell me, how cool would that be if you were, let's say, 10 years old, and all of a sudden you're one of your heroes would be coming to town for a football camp?
That would be awesome. I mean, like you said, 10 years old me, that would be going crazy. You know, I'm looking up to these athletes at such a young age, with most of these kids do, and I'm sure a lot of those kids at the Micah Parsons camp, you know, look at him as a role model, and to see him, you know, come as advertised and, you know, teach these kids, you know, how football works and just teach them real life in general. That's really what these camps are about, and it's just an inspiration, really.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Good job there. I appreciate all the help. Thank you, Angel, for giving us some of those cool videos and giving us the details on the Micah Parsons football camp. And you mentioned the camp coming up later this week now.
Yeah, Will Hernandez.
Is that another paid camp?
That'll be free.
A free camp. There you go. That's even better.
Yeah, his Miho Things. It's not a nonprofit necessarily. It's more kind of like to sell merchandise and more of a movement, you know, as a whole. But he calls it the Miho Things Camp.
Is he actually combining and joining forces with Iris Lopez from our partner station, Kiss FM?
Oh, that's interesting. No, that's not the case whatsoever. Miho Things is completely different than Miha Yes You Can.
Yeah, I thought Miho and Miha would be kind of a cool collab.
It would be
you?
A good collab. I should pitch that to him.
Miho Things and Miha Yes You Can. Why not?
I really like the collaboration possibility there.
18 past as we continue on Sports Talk. We'll come back and wrap it up right after Charlie 1. One last traffic update, and then it's on to the NBA Finals here on 600 ESPN El Paso. All right, final countdown here on Sports Talk as we wrap things up on a Monday. Esteban letting us know that we can cross the border with a real ID, compliant Texas driver's license. Don't need a passport, he says. Just look for a gold star on the upper right corner of your license.
Okay, I've tried to do this before multiple times with my friends, and maybe it's because I look like a college kid that was, you know, just trying to get back to the U.S. But when I was doing this before in the past, they would give me a hard time, Steve, at the border.
They?
Yeah.
Well, maybe, you know, Albert, maybe, you know, Esteban is one of these people that just, they look at him and they don't even give him, you know, they don't even think twice. Who knows?
They just nod. They just let him in.
Yeah, maybe so. Anyway, so you've had a hard time, so yeah.
Yeah,
the passport is probably the safer way to go. That really is. I'm just excited about using my passport card, which I haven't used since I got it, so this will be great.
Nice. It's always fun to use the passport and get another stamp or stuff like that. Yeah, most definitely.
There you go. So anyway, 22 past the hour as we continue. If you want to duck a call in the last few minutes, 505-6009. We have not talked about the latest Caitlin Clark saga with Angel Reese over the weekend, the flagrant one foul call that people have been talking about and playing to death. I said this earlier today when I was on with Buzz on the Queue. Adrian, I grew up watching basketball when that was the norm, and they've really gone out of their way to clean up the sport. No more fights, no more hard fouls, no more, you know, all the stuff that we're used to. But it's like, I watch this, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, you know what? This just reminds me of when I watched ball in the 80s, and that was just kind of the norm. And now everybody's talking about, you know, Angel trying to take off Caitlin's head and this and that. And I'm thinking to myself, man, instead of just, you know, analyzing every single hard foul like the Zapruder film, why just let them play and just leave it alone? And, you know, if you don't talk about it so much, maybe it won't be such a, you know, things won't be blown out of proportion the way they are every time they play.
Yeah, I think it's a good take because I'm just ready to continue to talk more about basketball with these two. Angel Reese playing for a much better team than Caitlin Clark. So she's probably fueled by her own roster. She's had players on her own roster, you know, be chippy against Caitlin Clark and vice versa. Caitlin Clark, watch a game. It's not like she's just this innocent girl. She's talking smack too, man. So let everybody play. Let them talk the smack. Let it be physical. Let the refs call what they need to call. Let suspensions happen if it gets to that point. But let's just keep going and talking more hoops.
Michael, you want to weigh in on this before we get to NBA Finals prediction for Game 5?
Of course. I mean, you know, I think the hate of the, you know, Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, I think a lot of it is not really justified. I mean, as Adrian mentioned, you know, Angel is on the way better team at the moment than Caitlin Clark is. But I agree with Adrian, you know, to his point about letting them have fun. Just have fun, you know, play basketball. That's what we're here for.
I like the fact they hate each other. I don't understand why we have to live in a society where we want everybody to be great friends with everybody on the floor as well as off the floor. You know, again, I don't feel like, I feel like it's part of competition. It's part of being a rival. And if you don't like somebody, that's not a bad thing. It's not like you have to say you have to like everybody so much on and off the floor. Most athletes that grew up felt they couldn't stand their opposition even when they were away from the game. So that to me doesn't bother me at all. I just feel like we're so sensitive that every time something happens because of the history of these two, all we do is want to blow it up and just make a huge deal out of it. And I've had enough of it already. Just want to let them play some ball.
Just constant, oh, this person should get suspended, or oh, there's no business for that in our league. Just forget about it, man. Just play hoops and focus on the actual sport itself.
All right, let's talk about tonight now, and let's get to Game 5. Will we be able to see a Game 6, or will the Celtics just put this one out of commission?
I think the Celtics are going to end it here tonight. You know, Game 4, pretty forgettable for them. I think, you know, they're coming back home to the Garden. That crowd is going to be jumping because of what's expected out of the Celtics team tonight. And I think they're going to be hoisting a trophy tonight in front of those fans.
Adrian.
Foolishly, I'm going with the Mavs. I bought in after Game 3, fourth quarter. And you might ask me, well, wait a second. Isn't that the quarter that Luka fouled out and they blew that game and choked that game out at home in Dallas? Yes, that was the game. I thought that something flipped, though. And I just don't feel like Boston was the same team in Game 4. You could argue. They just shrugged that off.
Yep.
Tatum kills it tonight, and they eviscerate the Mavs to hoist another title. I got the Mavs out tonight. I think they're going to extend it and push it to 6.
I'm going to take this. I'm going to take a page out of Esteban's Twitter X handbook. I think it's a gentleman's sweep. They were very kind enough to give Dallas that Game 4 at home because they decided, all right, we're just not going to show up. We want to go back and win it on our home floor. If Boston loses tonight, things will get very, very interesting. I just don't see that happening.
Just give me a good game, please. The last game was a blowout. I didn't even have to watch after the first quarter.
Man, we didn't even have a chance to talk about Mookie Betts breaking his hand.
Oh, man, terrible.
We'll do that tomorrow on the show. But get ready, folks. NBA Finals Game 5 is just 3 minutes away here on 600 ESPN El Paso.